Did they really? Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the City Council Chambers. We have a very special proclamation I'd like to read, and if our special guest would please come forward, that would be great for Native American Heritage Month. Who's coming forward? Who would like to come forward? All right, come on up. Whereas Native Americans, the indigenous people of this land flourish with vibrant cultures, develop one of the largest trade economies, and are the original stewards of Mother Earth. And whereas the city of Portland now rests on land at the confluence of the Willamette and Columbia Rivers, a major crossroads for the economic, social, and political interactions of the indigenous tribes for thousands of years. And whereas indigenous people hand down oral history, science, governance, and a distinct relationship with water, land, rocks, trees, birds, fish, and animals, and invaluable cultural knowledge and rich traditions that continue to thrive in Portland. And whereas indigenous people who have been here since time immemorial continue to contribute immeasurably to our county, state, and city's heritage, distinguishing themselves as scholars, veterans, teachers, athletes, artists, entrepreneurs, and leaders. And whereas the indigenous people of Portland is the 23rd largest in the United States, with nearly 30-odd some thousand people descended from more than 380 tribes and bands from across the nation. And whereas the community continues to contribute to the cultural fabric of the city of Portland through many events throughout the years, such as traditional powwows, festivals, celebrations, active community organizations, and tribal intergovernmental relations. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby call upon all citizens of Portland to commemorate this month with appropriate programs and activities and to celebrate the month of November 2012 as Native American Heritage Month. Congratulations. Okay. Go. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. It's my honor to recognize and thank a number of the people who made this day possible. And I want to apologize in advance. The print on the document I have is very small, and my eyesight is very bad. So if I conspicuously mispronounce the name, please accept my apologies. First, I want to recognize the Native American Advisory Committee that was formed in 2010. The committee has representatives from both local agencies and tribes, and they have been instrumental in organizing Native American Family Day. The next one is November 16th at the East Portland Community Center. They are also working closely with Bureau staff to help identify historical perspectives and opportunities. I want to, on behalf of the mayor, recognize a number of the committee members who put together this celebration today and the proclamation. Many of them are here with us today. From the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, David Lewis and Greg Archuleta. From the Confederate Tribes of the Siletz Indian, Katie Holland and Ferdine McGuire. From the Portland Youth and Elder Council, Danita Fry, Leilani Ovales, and Shauna Ziert. From the Bow and Arrow Culture Club, Sandy Allman and Sherry Scott. And from NARA, Solomon Trimble. From the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, Joe Marie Tessman. From the PSU Native Program, Judy Bluehorse and Dean Azul. And from the Portland Public Schools Indian Education Program, Karen Kitchen. And we would also like to acknowledge and thank from Portland Parks and Rec, Alejandro Vidalas, Cheryl Juber, Max Behrens, Carolyn Lee, David Barrios, and Tanya Carril. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Would anyone like to say anything?
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm David Lewis with the Grand Ronde Tribe. We'd like to say that thank you for this proclamation. This helps us with programming in the Portland area, and we are open for all opportunities to work in Portland to enrich the experience of Portlandians or Portlanders, whatever you call them. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Congratulations.
Can I add to that? We presented to the Portland Parks Board this morning and talked about the wonderful opportunities that the Native Community Advisory Council has been collaborating with in the past couple, 2.5 years, I think, since formation of the committee. But also just wanted to highlight that this afternoon we'll do a ground blessing ceremony at the Thomas Cawley site in the Cawley neighborhood from 3 to 4 o'clock. And I don't know, but I would suspect that this might be the first time in Portland's history that we've actually began a project with a blessing from the Native community on the ceded land that we do business on. So thank you for the partnership.
That's great. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Carla, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
One other special recognition before we get started, and that is a big congratulations to the recently re-elected City Commissioner, Amanda Fritz. Congratulations. Whoa. And could you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
I'm here, and I do thank the voters of Portland for giving me the honor of continuing to be here for the next 4 years.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Let's begin with communications. Can you please read the title to item number 1233?
Request of Mary Eng to address council regarding copyright or copyleft, the post-copyright city of future.
Okay, I want you guys to check out the packets I'm passing out today. We've got malaria research, and we have hackers. We have some very high-profile hackers that are doing amazing things for the future of humanity. We should not keep pharmaceuticals out of the hands of people in Africa who are dying of malaria. Pharmaceutical patents can often get in the way of fair prices and development for the end and eradication of disease. I'd like to show you the Creative Commons website, which is a very moderate approach from Harvard professor Lawrence Lessig, who's been very instrumental in fighting corruption in government and cutting down on waste and improving efficiency. There is something from the GNU project on copyleft, which elaborates on what that actually means. And then I'd also like to draw your attention to the Office of Management and Budget, which under Cass Sunstein has been working in the White House towards reducing federal waste and streamlining and digitizing. And I want to thank the City of Portland for your excellent archiving and digital transmissions. And the more we can start to build bridges across the generations and reach out to young kids who may perceive themselves as hackers, we can understand that their commitment towards information freedom often revolves around very important issues to humanity, such as domestic violence research, which is behind closed portals, where you have to pay $44 for a federally funded research project on domestic violence. And we should start to see that sometimes copyright can be a good thing, but sometimes it can get in the way of actual progress for humanity. One of the hackers in prison right now is a guy called Gottfried Svartholm, who was recently apprehended and taken into custody in Sweden, where he's being held in solitary confinement. To some people, he's a hero, because for people like me, I love to read international law, and so I'm very thrilled to get access to a lot of international research, which some of that's coming out through MIT. We've got another high-profile hacker called Aaron Swartz, who liberated some information from the JSTOR databases, which are often federally financed. So my idea is that we need to do technological outreach to young communities, of very highly technologically literate young people, respect their knowledge and intelligence, and respect their worldviews, which are often very humanitarian in interest. And then I've also got some information about a religious movement that values copying as a very sacred act and the sharing of information as a sacred act. And then I've got the information on 5 of the 10 rapes at Portland State University, and that is to show you that sharing information is a good thing for your own safety and protection.
Yay!
Can you please read the title for item number 1234?
Request of Wade A. Varner to address council regarding starting a homeless camp.
There's only one at a time, sorry. Yep.
Hi, my name is Wade Varner. I'm the founding director and president of Homeless Against Homelessness.
Can you push that button so we can hear you? Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm here today to present to you an idea of a homeless camp that will be built at no cost to the city. All we need is a place to put it, and in order to do that, we must have your help. We have a fully funded, fully paid for camp ready to go. If you okayed it today and gave us a place, we would set up tomorrow. It depends on the size of the plot that we get is how many people that will be allowed to house. And again, it'll be no cost to the city. We'll have things like a computer lab where people can come in and look for jobs, look for work. We'll have people coming in to take care of the social issues and stuff like that. We intend to have 12-step programs, everything that we need to do this properly is the fact that we need to do this. We had over 50 people die on the streets of Portland last year, and that's not a very good thing. We need to take and make sure that people have a safe and place to put their stuff even. You know, we started that down there in Old Town with a check-in. We'd have services like that. We'd have meals in there. We'd have computer labs. We'd have the people that come from the social service agencies. We've got a lot of agencies that are willing and a lot of different people that are willing to come online and help us do this. We have it fully funded and ready to go. So what we're asking you guys to do, and from what I understand, we're already have a second Dignity Village type of on the books from the state. So what we need to do is just take that one and make it. I mean, we got to have a place for people to go. I mean, they have no place to go right now. They have no place to hang out during the day that's large enough for them. There's no place to hang out with cages where they can put their animals as they're accessing these services. These are the kind of things that we need here in Portland, and that's the way that Portland has always been. I was part of the 9 or 7-point plan Bud Clark tried 30 years ago when I was homeless. If I can come and do this with programs and services, I mean, it took me years to get to where I am right now. And I have to apologize to you guys because I was very rude to you the last time I was in here. But I was having a really bad month, and that's that. But this is too important of a thing because lives are at stake here to put away again. We should have already had something like this going for the winter, because it's going to be a cold, nasty winter this year. And if we don't have this, then we're not going to be able to save people. And that's what I'm trying to do right now, is save lives. Thank you.
Carla, can you please read the title for item number 1235?
Request of Jason Kirsten to address council regarding homeless camping.
Morning. My name is Jason Kirsten. I'm the Executive Director for Homeless Against Homelessness in America. I'm going to piggyback on what Wade said. I've been doing some research, and according to the United Nations Human Declaration of Human Rights, Article 25, Section 1 says everyone has a right to a standard of living adequate for health and well-being of himself or him and his family, including food, clothing, housing, medical care, and necessary social services. With this proposal that we put in front of you guys, that's exactly what we're trying to do. We want to help people. As a formerly homeless veteran on the streets, I wish that when I was out there, some of the services would have been made available to me. Like Wade said, you know, we fully plan to do this with our, you know, with our money instead of the city coffers and the taxpayer. We've got several organizations that are willing to come on board with us and help us out. But like Wade says, we need a place to do this. I'm tired of burying my friends every year that die on these streets. I came out here in the 80s, by the grace of God and some of the social services out there, I'd be able to get myself off the streets and get myself clean and sober, as some of you know. You know, and now it's time I feel that I need to give back to the community that took care of me when I was out here. And the only way we can do this is with the help of the city, at least just to give us a spot. That's all we're asking. You know, we're not asking for, you know, total enforcement. We can do this ourselves. You know, we can handle the security part of it, the safety part of it. We've got people that are willing to come in from social services, you know, and all that and help us. Other organizations that some of them are represented here that are willing to, you know, come and help us out. You know, I mean, it's not just our job. It's everybody's job in the city of Portland to look out for our people. You know, I keep hearing that Portland is for the people. So let's do, why can't we do that? You know, why can't we, as, doesn't matter if we're mayor, council members, chiefs of police, or the guy on the street. We all need to come together as one and be a family and take care of our family. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Can you please read the title for item number 1236?
Request of Carl Shaw to address council regarding homeless camping.
Hi.
I'd like to say thank you.
And thank you for the opportunity to present an idea in order to help people. I'm a former enlisted, an Air Force firefighter. And the reason why I came to Portland also was to be able to get schooling. I served in Soto Cano Air Base after Hurricane Mitch. And I went through Tegucigalpa and watched people come together during a natural disaster. And then when I got to the airbase was closed. And we didn't treat anybody. And it created a complete divide between everybody, the civilians, Army and Air Force, and civilians. Once we actually started actually help people, that's when the Americans and the Hondurans could actually work together to be able to rebuild relationships. And I came to Portland for schooling, and I managed a single resident occupancy dorm-style apartment. And I would regularly keep one apartment vacant in order to allow people to come in and sleep. I couldn't actually live in the place, and so I actually took all my personal belongings, put it into storage, and went camping. And actually got to see for a short time, within a span of 3 weeks, of the divide between people. I believe that people want to see change, and we're not asking for a divide between people. We're trying to collect and deliver a process in order to help people. We don't want to push anybody else out. We want to actually unite people. There are a lot of people in Old Town that have a lot of heart to help a lot of people. But what we're asking for is a temporary place and temporary direction in order to make sure people have and can meet other people during times of internal crisis and stress where they will not be able to organize and actually be able to talk to people and actually reach incredible services. If we actually were able to give people a temporary leaping pad, it would be able to speed up the process of already established people and services and churches. What I want to say is also thank you. I'm finishing up at Portland State in economics. And I want to say thank you, and there is enough for all.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Carla, can you please read the title to item number 1237?
Request of Reverend Cecil Prescott to address council regarding the foreclosure issue and Alicia Jackson situation.
Hi, welcome back.
Good morning. When we signed up to address the council this morning, we did not know who would precede us. I think it is important to note that we are all gathered here to address the need for people to remain in their homes so that they may not become homeless. I come here today as a representative of faith leaders in our community to call upon you, our city commissioners, to stop spending public monies on policies and practices that make bank profits more important than keeping people in their homes. Spending tax dollars on foreclosure evictions, as was done recently when Portland police was deployed on October 30th to aid the eviction of Patricia Williams and her husband, Darren, from their Southeast Portland home, amount to public subsidy to bank profits and the profits of a developer industry that is poaching homes for profit in Portland. We also ask you that the city implement policy that specifically put the welfare of the homeowners, families, and the communities before the profits of banks. On the issue of confronting blight, for instance, we believe that a policy that keeps people in their homes is the best solution, preventing blight before it occurs. We write this letter in support of over 3,000 families throughout Multnomah County now facing foreclosure. The economic downturn of the last 4 years has caused a crisis in our community. While the banks were bailed out with our tax dollars, they are not extending a similar helping hand to those who are in danger of losing their homes to foreclosure. Instead, the banks are taking this opportunity to seize property and are changing our neighborhoods for the worse. Families endure the trauma of displacement as neighborhoods are uprooted and blighted homes sit empty. In a bank-caused economic crisis that affects our community jobs, access to health care, and ability to pay mortgages, combined with the ongoing effort of banks to avoid responsibility, no foreclosure can be called fair. Now, this is a deeply moral crisis and has special significance to all of us who are called to be our sisters and brothers' keeper. We see the pattern of greed and destruction caused by banks, and we believe that our community must take a stand with our families, with our neighborhoods, and to effect a more just community here in Portland. We, the undersigned community faith leaders, urge you to work with us to keep families in their homes. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend. Appreciate it. We'll now consider the consent agenda. Any items to pull from the consent agenda?
We've had a request to pull 1246.
All right. Do you want to read 1246?
Amend contract with CH2M Hill, Inc. to increase compensation and scope of work for Powell Butte Reservoir 2, Phase 2 project.
We'll hear this at the end of our meeting. Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Consent agenda is approved. We'll now turn to the regular agenda. Can you please read the budget, or can you please read item number 1251?
Adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the supplemental budget for the fiscal year 2012-13 fall budget monitoring process and make budget adjustments in various funds.
So the fall budget monitoring process, known as the bump, will generate a 2.388 shortfall for the current fiscal year due to shortfall in beginning fund balance, bureau encumbrance, and program carryover requests and new budget requests. Citywide, the fall equates to a 0.65% of the current year general fund spending. I've conferred with my colleagues here on the council, and we believe that this shortfall should be addressed immediately rather than allowing it to carry into the beginning of the FY 2013 and 2014 fiscal year. So this morning I'm introducing a substitution, or is it an amendment? Is it a substitution or an amendment?
A substitution.
Introducing a substitution to the fall bump that will reduce the Bureau general fund budgets on a one-time basis. The reduction will be taken in the fall bump, but bureaus will have until winter bump to allocate the reduction to specific programs. As has been our approach as a city council, when we have to make cuts, we seek to limit cuts or reduce cuts as much as possible to first responders like police, fire, and BOAC, and to where we can cut administration and overhead as much as possible. So what we have in front of us in the substitution will be public safety will be cut by 0.33%. The Office of Management and Finance will be cut by 6.41%, and all other bureaus will be cut by 0.65%. Again, it's our goal to preserve public safety bureaus by focusing a large portion of the cuts on administrative services. All right, mid-year cuts are always difficult, particularly in a budget year, but the way we've budgeted is to keep our budgets balanced as we proceed through a fiscal year. So with that, staff is here to answer any questions. I move the substitute.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
So, I guess, go ahead and make a presentation. Is there a presentation?
Only if you want.
Oh, okay.
We're going to take a vote on the substitution.
And Mayor, I just want to clarify, we're substituting exhibits 1 through 4. The other exhibits didn't change.
Okay.
So maybe if I can just make sure I understand this. So we are now adopting a bump that will
cut
in anticipation of a shortfall.
We cut 2.388 million.
Is that million? Okay.
Yeah.
And that is that results in the 0.65 for 0.65. Most general fund except 0.33 for, what was it, police?
So it's 0.65 for all bureaus except OMF has a 6.41,
okay.
And first responders have a 0.33, so half.
So first responders, that's police, fire, and BOAC? Okay.
They're only cut half as much as everybody else. So can you please call the vote on the substitution?
Leonard? Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Any other questions for staff? All right. Would anyone like to testify on this matter? What's that?
I do have a question.
Yep.
I'm just looking at this. It seems like there's 4 commissioners' budgets in here, but not a fifth.
Should all be in there.
We're anticipating a council of five.
We only have 4 commissioners.
Well, we have 5 commissioners.
Commissioner Fritz, which exhibit?
I'm just looking at the front page that I just got handed and trying to figure out.
I think she's looking at the front page of exhibit. Is that exhibit 2?
Exhibit 1.
Exhibit 1.
Forgive me, I didn't get very much sleep last night, so perhaps I'm not tracking.
I think it's the 4 commissioners and
Office of the Mayor separate.
Mayor.
Officer Kekman said that. Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Would anyone wish to testify on item number 1251 or other questions?
I'd have a question. So, Andrew, I corresponded with you about this last week.
Mm-hmm.
How many new general fund positions are being created in this bump?
So there are in the bump, and this is summarized in the memo. It's sort of the end of the memo that you should all have. There are 16 new permanent positions. Those are not all general fund. That's in total 16 new permanent positions, some of which are conversions from temporary to permanent, and then 2 positions being eliminated. So there's a net of 14. And of those, only the minority evaluator position in procurement is funded with general fund resources in terms of an impact on general fund resources. There is another administrative.
So you're saying one of the 14
of
positions
of the 14. There is also an administrative assistant within OMF that's being converted, but that's being funded with internal resources, so it's not mm-hmm. so it's not a new resource. So technically there are those 2 positions.
Well, 2 out of 14.
Yeah, let me actually rephrase that. Let me go through very quickly the positions in each bureau so we can make sure we're getting the general fund. Housing is converting a limited term position to full time. And it's been funded again for a number of years, mostly through grant funds. Parks is eliminating a vacant position, and then they're adding a facilities construction specialist, again, funded out of their capital construction fund, so not with general fund resources. VES is converting 4 environmental techs from limited term to regular. BDS, again, converting three regular positions due to increased workload, again, non-general fund. Within OMF Revenue Bureau, they're creating two permanent positions, and those are being funded out of, or the one of those is a management assistant being funded out of cable fund revenue. The other is a program specialist, which will be funded with the vacant property registration program, assuming that that comes to council. The position's being created now. It won't be filled or funded unless the
For the vacant property registration program?
That's right. And it will be funded with program revenues if, in fact, council moves forward with that program.
Okay.
Within OMF, the Bureau of Internal Business Services, we have a minority evaluator position, which has been funded for a number of years through an IA. It's being converted into the general fund overhead model. Mm-hmm. So that'll be included for next year's budget. There's also an administrative assistant.
That is the person who helps organize and obtain people to sit on panels that review proposals and contracts representing minority communities.
Okay. Right. There's also an administrative assistant in the Bureau of Internal Business Services that's being converted, limited term to regular, but again, funded within their base budget. And then PBOT is creating a parking code enforcement officer and a part-time engineering technician, again, being funded there out of PBOT revenues, Bureau revenue.
Thank you.
Does anyone wish to testify on this matter?
I have one more question, sorry.
I'm going to take testimony first.
Okay.
All right, your question?
Could you just explain to me and anybody who might be interested why a couple of the commissioner's offices are being cut 15,000, 16,000, and others 1.4, and others getting money added in?
Again, are you back on?
Back on Exhibit 1.
Back on Exhibit 1.
That's going to be a combination of some of the commissioner's offices have encumbrance carryover, and I believe that there's also a new. Are there any new requests for? No, the office of the mayor has. Does not have a new request. So most of that is going to be encumbrance carryover that creates the differential.
Most of it's CHIF.
And also it was a pro rata reduction, and because Commissioner Saltzman's office has the domestic.
So is that balanced out that there is a cut to the commissioner's office as well as, and then added back, then it doesn't show?
So to the commissioners, the office budgets are being cut the same percentage in terms of the mid-year cuts, but some commissioners and the mayor have programs. So the domestic violence program, for instance, is within Commissioner Saltzman's budget.
Why doesn't the cut show up in the other offices, though, and then get added back?
I may not follow your question.
Well, for instance, exactly. In the Commissioner of Public Affairs, it doesn't show any cut.
And I think what's happening there is it's being netted out in terms of there are a lot of what this appropriation what the appropriation schedule is showing is a net total of all changes. If you go to the general fund reconciliation report, it will break some of those down. So we'll have encumbrance carryovers, for instance, for the domestic violence program, which we do every year, would show as an add, but then the reductions would also be shown for those. So if you look at the mid-year reductions on the general fund reconciliation, the very bottom of page one, if you have that report, again, you can see there's a larger reduction there for Commissioner Saltzman's office, again, because the domestic violence program is in there. Then the other three commissioners are very, very close to one another.
And then you also have the vacancy savings that also hits commissioners differentially.
We didn't have a work session on this, otherwise I'd have asked my questions ahead of time. Just in terms of the way it's set out, it would be helpful if that was shown as takeaway and given back, just so that it's clear.
So the appropriation schedule is always going to net out all the changes. What we try and do here is sort of walk through the specifics, but why don't we provide you a crosswalk how we got to those numbers. The other thing, Mayor, just to mention really quickly so everyone knows, we talked about the minority evaluator position being added to the general fund overhead. The Office of Equity also will be added in this bump, 70% of it, which sort of provides the citywide service into the overhead model for next year's budget.
All right. Carl, would you please call the vote?
On the
1251.
We have someone who wants to testify.
I asked. Nobody bonded.
Jesse Sponberg.
Oh, Joe wants to testify. Coming up.
We have Jesse Sponberg as well.
Jesse, coming up.
This is on 1251.
Okay.
Never been one to say no.
My name is Joe Walsh. I'm acting as a citizen. I am not qualified to argue with any of you on this budget. However, you're cutting the budget when you got millions of dollars to spend on stuff that we don't want you to do. So the question is why? Why are you allowing the water department to spend millions of dollars to cover reservoirs that the citizens of this city said don't do it? But you're going to cut everybody else's budget, which affects us. The services will not be the same. But you're going to push it through. Again, you have two new people coming on this council in less than 2 months. But you're going to push this budget through and cut department after department after department when this man over here is spending millions of dollars for something we don't want. Again, I'm not qualified. I'm not an economist. This is wrong. It doesn't feel right. It's wrong. Don't do it. Thank you.
First, congratulations, Commissioner Fish.
Fritz.
That's what I meant to say. Sorry. I didn't mean to. I asked Joe to sign me up to speak on something else. But since I'm here, I would just like to encourage you and those of you who remain on the council to look into setting up a state bank. I think it would be a service to my friend Cameron Whitten, who's really pushing this idea, if while I'm here I took the opportunity to plug it in front of a news camera. I'm sure you all are familiar with the idea of a state bank, where we take the money that we currently have in the Bank of North Dakota and we use it to
speak to the agenda item.
I don't even know what the agenda item is. I just got here.
All right. Thank you.
I just really came up here so I could say, remember when I told you we were going to shut down that fluoride shit? We shut it down.
You get to talk to the agenda.
Remove me.
Carla, can you cut off the mic? All right, you be quiet or you're going to be removed. You're going to be removed. Keep talking. You're going to be removed. Remove him. Mr. Peterson, would you remove him, please? Carla, can you please call the vote? Come on. Either.
Leonard?
This isn't a circus. This isn't a circus. This is city council.
This is a circus.
All right.
This is a circus.
You're going to either leave. You are either going to leave now or I'll have you removed. It is your decision. Mr. Peterson, would you have him removed, please? Don't give Mr. Peterson a bad time. All right. Carly, can you please call the vote?
Did one more wanted to speak?
Hello, my name is Crystal Ilinski, and I represent 10,000 residents of Portland. And I would like to comment on this vote or budget decision. I'm woefully unprepared because I actually tried to be a part of the budget process as a citizen. And it was very difficult, and I really don't know how we got to this budget. I haven't been able to follow it. So over the last 3 or 4 years, I've tried to attend meetings, and I think the website is wonderful, but because of my situation with homelessness, you all know me pretty well, it was difficult to get online, and then I wasn't informed. I asked to be contacted by the groups that I was attending, the budget groups, and I wasn't contacted. And I'm sorry that Mayor Sam Adams is so upset that he's not even looking at me today.
I'm listening to you. Would you continue? You've got another minute and 54 seconds.
I find it very, very difficult to be a part of my city. and to sit here on a regular basis as often as I can, to go out of my way to be here and not be heard. And when I attend the budget meetings, I don't feel like we're having any concrete input. I haven't even gotten my bus tickets to attend. And though the individuals are nice, oftentimes the security here have been difficult. In fact, there was a point where I wasn't even allowed to get into the building to attend a budget meeting. So I would like to make it a lot more accessible to people. And I understand that respect is foremost in a lot of our books, but every person is trying to have their voice heard in different ways. And the way Jesse is, to me, is a huge hero in Cascadia in general. I mean, he cares about things that this budget, you know, cutting here and there just to, I don't even know why we have to cover the water reservoirs when New York has figured out a way beyond it. Meanwhile, Hanford is leaking, and Jesse is out there on a regular basis speaking out. And there, we have heroes amongst us, and they may speak differently than you, and they may look differently than you, and not be sitting back there. But please listen to us. Please make it easier for me to attend the budget meetings. Thank you.
All right, can you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I do appreciate this council making, and under the mayor's leadership, making some general fund reductions at this point in time. I think we have to be very mindful of an upcoming budget year that looks to be very difficult, so making these cuts at this time, I think will avoid, it's not going to avoid the pain later on, but it'll make it a little bit more tractable to deal with. So please vote aye.
Adams.
I want to thank the Budget Shop, Bureau of Financial Planning, for your great work, and City Council and your team, and the City Council for keeping us all on top of the budget. Aye. All right. Can you please, did you want to move yours up?
Yeah, I have previously approved absence starting at 11, so
why don't we
1246 now.
Can you please, again, read the title for 1246?
Amend contract with CH2M Hill, Inc. to increase compensation and scope of work for Powell Butte Reservoir 2 Phase 2 project.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
David Schaff, Director of the Water Bureau.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the Director of the Portland Water Bureau. With me is Chief Engineer Mike Stuhr. This is the purpose of this amendment or ordinance is to amend the contract, the design contract for our Powell Butte project. The original budget for Powell Butte was approximately $137 million. Our current projection is that we'll come in at about $105 million. As you know, this is our second 50 million gallon reservoir at Powell Butte. It's part of our overall long-range plan to provide adequate, reliable in-town terminal storage facilities, and the Powell Butte is the first of several steps to replace the in-town open drinking water reservoirs at Mount Tabor and Washington Park as part of the LT2 rule. This project, as you will remember, was separated into two phases. The first phase was to excavate the first 20 feet for the 50 million gallon reservoir, do erosion control, fencing, road improvements for the construction of the project. It was completed in 2010. We originally estimated a $12 million cost, and it came in at about $4.5 million. This particular contract provides engineering services for the design and construction during the second phase of that reservoir. The associated piping, the outfall structures, the maintenance building, the interpretive center, the caretaker house, parking lots, trails, roads, bridges, and ancillary items. If you'll remember, Phase 2 required an extensive landscape review with an appeal to the City Council, which occurred while the project was being bid. One of the conditions of the land use was construction of the water and park improvements be done concurrently in the same contract to make sure that the city fulfilled the obligations and requirements in the land use. Following the land use, we had 24 permits that were required, which required a number of design modifications in addition to the ones modified in previous amendments. So what's the purpose of this amendment? Amendment 8 provides additional engineering assistance during construction of the project. The added work includes the creation of additional interpretive elements, additional drawings, additional aerial photos, continued construction support, including an engineer of record, observations and review, special inspections and observations by our geotechs, architects, and the structural and mechanical engineers, as well as the design modifications during construction for permit compliance and field fit changes. So why do we have a design schedule for a project that we're already under construction in? While it's complete, the project is still in construction, and there are a number of engineering services required during the construction of the project, through the startup and commissioning of the reservoir itself, as well as during the contract closeout. We expect that the reservoir will be operational in August or September of next year, 2013, and that the contract will be substantially complete in April of 2014. Mike is here to talk about the specifics to Amendment Number 8, which is the purpose of the reservoir or purpose of the ordinance today.
At this point, the project is probably about 60% complete. The floor and the sidewalls of the reservoir are done, and they're putting in the false work so we can put the roof on it. It's really quite spectacular, and looking at the drawings, I don't think give you justice for the size. It's also a very complex project in the sense that it's pretty heavy-duty structural engineering because of the seismic code, and we also have a mix of things that you don't typically find in a project like this. We're in some ways building a small city. We have a water facility. We have a maintenance facility. We have a house. We have park facilities, all being built under this contract. Specific items that are covered in this change order are additional interpretive elements. We're adding 8 additional maps to the interpretive facility. The way that happens is we have a project advisory group that has, it's 12 different groups that have interest in Powell Butte, and we've been doing our best to be responsive to things that they would like to see in the interpretive center. So we're building 8 additional maps. We're adding 30 Mountain Finder directional wall mount signs. These were originally added by the Boy Scouts, actually put them up, but they keep getting vandalized, and we've been asked to make something a bit more substantial and vandal-proof, so we're taking care of that. When we originally put the project together, we expected about 1,500 submittals. What are submittals? We write pages and pages of specifications, but we can't sole source what we tell people to use. So from many of these specifications, the contractor has to submit what his exact choice is, and then we have to check that that, in fact, complies with the specifications and fits in the project. We'd expected about 1,500 submittals. We're going to end up with something we figure on the order of 3,300 submittals. And all of these have to be gone through in detail by someone who is knowledgeable of the project and the specific codes involved. As you can imagine, just the sheer numbers of that is a quite an amount of paper that has to be managed. In our projects right now, we're going to have something on the order of $200 million worth of construction underway. And one of the ways that we manage that, we can't afford to have permanent staff, as we use contractor staff to help us manage that. So we've got submittal coordination and liaison and moving all these pieces of paper back and forth and doing what we call responding to RFIs, requests for information, from the contractor.
You'll have a chance to talk in a minute.
Code and non-code observations, we have to make sure that everything complies with code. We're having additional aerial photographs done because the project is taking a bit longer than we had expected. And the project also adds on-site construction management support. That's basically what's in the change order. I would also note that even with this change order, we're still well under what we had programmed the project to be. And for a typical design contract for this type of work, it's about 12 to 15% of the construction. We'll be cooking right up on 15% of the construction with this change order. I don't expect there'll be any other change orders that come out of this. We're sort of out of the zone of where you get change site conditions and so on. And this thing should proceed to completion with no problem.
Commissioner Fritz?
So if I could summarize, the change order is due to requests that we have made for additional work. Is that correct?
Or change
additional work and assistance to us in managing the construction contract.
And this may not be a question for you, but rather for procurement services. But if you do know the answer to that, I'd like to know. Is there, we go, this is, was this a low bid or was this a general contract?
CGMC.
It was a bid contract, a construction contract. The design portion is done by RFP.
So is there any consequence in the next time we have a round of bidding if there are additional charges that might have affected who was the low bid?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
But it's fairly routine, and indeed in the code, that when there's changes of more than 25%, that comes back to council. But when you start with a low bid, is there any, in the next time that there's something up for bid, is there any looking at whether a bidder previously came in at the number that they had bid for?
This isn't a low bid. The contract for construction was a low bid, but we're talking about the design contract, which was an RFP process.
I see. Thank you.
In either case, we require justification for the change orders in either type of contract. And if we change the scope or we add things, we have an obligation to pay additionally.
So what percent complete are we on Palbute? It's Palbute 2, right?
Yes, so. Palbute 2. I'm just going to estimate. There's different, so many parts of this thing. It's about 60%, I would say.
60% complete.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I'm putting words in your mouth, Mike. Are you saying this probably is the last amendment to the CH2M Hill contract?
I would expect so, sir. Okay. This covers everything. And as I mentioned before, we have construction management support provided by contractors or personal services contract to handle peaks and valleys in our work. And the construction management support, which we're utilizing on this contract, for example, we don't have construction management support on Dam 2 Towers, which is underway at the same time. We have staff to handle that. We're going to end that construction management support next August when the reservoir is complete. There will be other things going on the project, finishing many of the other features, but we don't need construction management support for that. We'll be able to staff that internally.
And so the you mentioned that with the design cost is typically, I think you said,
12 to 15%.
So with this amendment, we're at 15%?
At 15.
15?
Yes.
15, okay. And the cost is going to be closer to $105 million than $137 million?
Right. That's correct.
Right. We're still receiving, even now with things we put out now, we're still receiving, I think, really good benefit from the economic environment is a good news story for us.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. We'll hear, unless there's discussion, we'll hear testimony.
I didn't have a sign-up sheet for this.
If you'd like to testify, please come forward. There are four seats at a time. Anyone wants to testify? Now is your time. All right. Anyone else? Okay. Hi. Please begin.
Good morning. Floyd Jones. I'm with Friends of the Reservoirs, and I'm here because we object to this pattern of extending these types of contracts repeatedly. This extends it for 2 years, increases the total compensation by 45%, and this is the second year in a row that we've added $2 million to this contract. So I've just handed you a graph that I put together a couple of years ago, and this addresses this consultant. You know, this was an LT2 project. which was awarded to the consultant who was hired by the Portland Water Bureau to go back to Washington, D.C. and help craft this EPA rule. So they were the only utility, Portland Water Bureau was the only utility in the nation that was seated at the table in Washington, D.C., crafting this EPA rule, which is now under revision and viewed as flawed by just about everyone who's examined the rule. And you can see from this chart, starting in 1995, when this consultant, this Water Bureau manager, left the Bureau, that he's been awarded this endless string of overlapping and interconnected contracts. He had a contract, two contracts in 1995, the minute he left the Bureau, that went on for 9 years, amended nine times. One of them was the Powell Butte Master Plan. And although it's, of course, too late to impact this project, we don't have any designs on this project stopping, but the motive behind all these other projects being in the Water Bureau plans, you'll hear the Bureau often say, well, this project has long been in our plans. Yes, it was in their plans based on a faulty modeling program that said water demand was going to go up. And you've seen the charts from the Portland Water Bureau. These are directly from their files. I've sent them to you before. That shows that since 1986, water demand has declined for 26 years. We use less water today than we did in 1986. And yet we're building all these tanks. We have two empty tanks up at Mount Tabor, 75 million gallons this winter. We'll use half the storage up at Washington Park because we have too much in-town storage. And you've seen from this last budget cycle how water demand is even more drastically declined as water rates skyrocketed in 2008. You've raised our water rates repeatedly just because water demand has declined. So if you're going to restore, if you'd like to see a good relationship with your customers in the future, this is one of the things that needs to stop, this conflict of interest awarding of contracts. And Commissioner Fritz, you asked about the bid process. In this case and in most cases, in this case there were only two corporations that bid. Both were associated with this consultant who moved from MWH Global in 2006 to CH2M Hill. MWH Global with Tetra Tech applied for this contract, as did
your time's up.
CH2M Hill.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hi. Can I give her my 3 minutes? Would you like to continue?
No.
I can't give her my 3 minutes. I thought you said, yeah.
I didn't hear what you said. I said, do you have, I thought you said, do I have 3 minutes? And that was what I was
saying. I see. My name is Beth John Syracuse. I represent me, we the people. I, too, have read the Open Reservoir Manual, in which Joe Glicker is the man, I believe, that is being talked about. He's on it, all over it. And he worked here. He went ahead and crafted the LT2 rule inside, and the two, as we all know, took out the grandfathered status that we have up there. I read a lot of information, and one of them that really disturbs me is the fact that we have a variance, and we have the city lawyer talking about the variance and talking about running the whole entire system at the same time the variance is going on. So that we really don't have a variance. We're just playing with the 10 years that variance gives us. And we've got the 7 permits to bury and do all the different things that y'all want to do up there instead of addressing the fact that we really do want to keep those open reservoirs. And they're not even being addressed that way by the city council. I know Randy said to me, what do you think, I'm stupid? Do you think I really want to close those reservoirs? You know, I don't know, Randy, because, you know, the whole time you say one thing and you do another. And that's what I'm finding with this whole 9 yards at the Water Bureau, with what's going on. If they need to drain something or check something, all of a sudden there's an E. coli scare. Maybe E. coli. Or it was before, maybe cryptosporidium. But see, cryptosporidium is like snakes. There's some that aren't poisonous. Matter of fact, most of it. And the water and the sun take care of most of this cryptosporidium you would find in open reservoirs. The bad kind is the stuff that doesn't get into our reservoirs, as Randy well knows, until you start bringing buses full of kids with hands and we start putting houses up there and we start creating places where it'd be very easy for the boy who cries wolf over there to say, could be E. coli. We're going to close down West Hills Water and the restaurants for one day because Sam Adams is tweeting. Randy gets there the next day, no, there's not E. coli. I just don't get it because I feel like we're all being manipulated one way or the other depending upon what you want to do with the water. And I think the hidden agendas are just really bad news because they don't bring anybody any satisfaction, none. There's no win in a hidden agenda. And since the hidden agenda I found is to regionalize our water, and hence, oh yeah, there's regionalization plans, Mayor Adams. Yes, I've read them. And I've talked to